Hello.
Hello. I thought I would try calling you.
And I tried to call you. Are we on two calls?
Don't know, but we're definitely talking to one another.
Which is a good start for a podcast, isn't it?
It is.
This is a podcast in which two friends talk about the pleasures, absurdities, and imperfections of being human. I'm Simon Ellis.
And I'm Lee Miller. Welcome to Midlifing.
I like the idea of a parallel universe podcast.
Sliding Doors. How are you?
Sliding Doors. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Back when she liked to pretend she was English.
Is she not English? I knew that.
Now, do you know what her mother is called?
It's just not a chance. I mean, I know, wasn't her mother a famous actor?
Yes, Blythe Danner. She was in Westworld, the 1973 Michael Crichton adaptation starring Yul Brynner. There you go.
Sorry, wait, right? There's a 1973...
No, maybe she was in the sequel to it.
There's a 1973 version. You mean Westworld?
It might not be. Yeah.
Westworld's as old as the hills.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The TV show is like a remake of a 1970s. It might not be 73. It might not be as old as that. And now that I think about it, Blythe Danner might have been in the sequel. Not sure. Richard something or other was in the first one.
Yes, he was, wasn't he?
With the, yeah, what's he called, Richard?
Some,
I can see
some
him. I can see
Richard,
his face. Anyway. Are you Googling?
No.
Because that's cheetling.
This podcast is increasingly becoming a conversation in which you recall things about movies and TV shows that I know nothing about, or should recall but don't.
Or when it's not that, you're saying, have you heard of this sport? And I go, no, I have not heard of that sport.
I mean, it's amazing we have as many listeners as we do, really.
All six of them.
Yeah.
Tell me, how's your week been?
My week has been intense, Lee Miller.
Oh, wow. Now, I presume you mean it's been hardcore and busy, not you've been camping.
Not that I've been what?
I'm so sorry. Camping.
Camping.
Intense. I mean, you can hang out on me right now.
Wow.
I know, that was bad.
Should we just stop this episode?
I think I just won. Tell me, how has it
been
intense?
I didn't spend any time in a tent, but I will be soon. Actually, I'm wearing shorts. I'm wearing shorts quite a bit lately, cosmically. Because I think that...
Cosmically.
I'm wearing them cosmically as opposed to wearing cosmic shorts, which is... I think it's going to work that the temperatures will warm up as a consequence of me wearing shorts. Like the cosmos will see that I'm wearing shorts and go, we'd better warm things up for that boy.
Oh, I see. So you're cosmically ordering warmer weather through wearing shorts.
Correct. Which does mean that this podcast, I'm recording it. I've got cold knees.
Yeah.
truth be told. But yes, I'll be in a tent in a couple of weeks, actually.
I presume not in this country. I presume
somewhere
better.
Yes, in this country.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I've got good warm clothes.
You're going to need them. Mm. I will be in Malta in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I did see that you're the star. You and Bob are the stars of the show.
We're the closing headline act of the conference.
Are you the closing headline
how
act?
That's how I think of the keynote on the last day, the closing headline act.
Oh, it's not like the opening Beyonce, day. No.
I'm like Beyonce and on Glastonbury. You know, I'm on Sunday night on the Triangle Stage or whatever it's called. It's not the Triangle Stage, is it?
Anyway. I don't know. Yeah, you're basically Paul McCartney.
I mean, that hurts my heart.
I thought it might.
Yeah, you know I don't like the Beatles.
I know you don't like the Beatles. You've got strong opinions about lots of things, don't you? Do you think you have stronger opinions about things than I do? Or is it just that...
No.
No.
No. I just... I I am more intemperate in my articulation of them. And also, I can be convinced really quickly not to believe that. No, the Beatles are really good, Lee. Oh, okay, right, right, cool. The Beatles are great. I love them. I am.
You're a flibbity gibbet.
I am the very definition of flibbity gibbet. Anyway, you said you had an intense week. I took us in a silly direction. Tell me about the intensity of your past week.
I don't think it's that interesting, actually. I think it's just I had 2 days of annual leave, which got they got hijacked by a work deadline.
Oh, no.
Stolen from me.
Oh.
Yeah, that wasn't great. I didn't like that. Although it was funny because Tuesday was a little bit spring-like here. Not temperature-wise. Temperature was still fucking... just as though, you know, you just have to swear when you talk about the weather in this country. But just freezing still. Like, you know, it was a posh 11 degrees. And but it was just, there was something, you know, there was a guy mowing the lawns, the birds were doing their thing, the light was a little different, and the sun was just coming in the windows, which made it warm enough in the house to have a nap in the sun on my bed, and woke up just smiling, going, oh, that's all I needed for a holiday. That was 30 minutes of bliss.
And then back to filling in a form.
Back to the expression of interest that was, you know, exactly. So, yeah, it's been, and then just, yeah, lots of juggling and just that feeling, which is, no, you know, again, this is not that interesting, but just that feeling of, you know, what if I've got to get through this week. I have to be very careful about how I look after myself through this week. So long days, early mornings, et cetera. Mm. Yeah. Mm. But, yeah, I'm good. Mm. I made it.
Mm. Oh, well done. I'm glad you got to the other side. I feel your pain. I similarly had an intense week. Mine involved travelling as well, which kind of expedited my exhaustion.
Travelling is tiring, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a long haul. I was just up and down to London, but that's still like 3.5 hours from where I am.
That's right. That's you went
and I did it in a day.
You went and gave Rishi Sunak the finger, didn't you?
I was at the Palace of Westminster for a launch event. I was very polite. I shook the hands of MPs and I did not communicate my disappointment in their ilk.
Did you shake hands with both flavours of MP?
More than both. I shook hands with 3 different flavours of MPs.
Wait, there's a third kind in this country?
Yeah. Just hanging on by their fingertips, there's some Liberal Democrats.
Did you shake any green hands?
I shook a green councillor's hand. I didn't shake a green MP's hand.
Were you crossing your fingers behind your back when you shook the hands of Conservative MPs?
No, because I'm still meeting a human being, and there are many people whose hands
don't
I shake humanize who I might
them.
Not agree.
Don't humanize them, Lee Miller.
There are lots. Oh no, you know there are lots of people that we care about in our lives who we might not agree with.
Oh, name one.
Name one person that we might like but don't agree with ideologically.
Exactly.
Each other.
Wait, what?
We're not always on the same page. I mean, I don't think we're that far away from one another, but we're not on the same page and, you know, all the time. There are things that we differ on, which is good.
Yeah, stracciatella or vanilla.
Are you talking about ice cream flavours?
Matthew McConaughey.
Ugh, see? I mean, you'd actually go and watch a film with him and I would set fire to the cinema in which it's being obviously with nobody in it. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't.
What a thoughtful human being. Anyway, well done. Well done you for going to the nation's, the centre of the nation's power and shaking hands with those that wield it.
It was very strange because I had to take... this isn't the strange bit. I had to take identification, and you go through a process that's effectively like going on an aeroplane.
Did you have to hand in your knives, all the knives that you'd taken on your person that
you're not allowed to take knives in, just
did
like
you pull
an
a little revolver out from your sock as well? Because I know you keep one down there.
You put everything in a little tray and it's scanned, and then you go through like the little
your silencer, your grenades.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah, I did all of that. You're also not allowed to take liquids in, just like an aeroplane, which I thought was quite interesting.
Oh. And was there some kind of, when they set you down, was there some kind of choreography of things you're supposed to do and not do in an emergency?
No, they didn't do that because it was quite clear where the emergency exits were.
Right.
I didn't have to have that explained to me. So it was odd because I walked in, and I had to go past a lot of tourists, people on their holiday going to see the Palace of Westminster and appreciate the Houses of Parliament in all its glory, taking photographs, having selfies.
I mean, that part of it.
Well, it blew my mind as well, because I was kind of like, what's going on? Why are people doing this? And of course, this is a 600 or 700 year old building. Of course, people have come from around the world to take a photograph. It's really old. That bit sort of shouldn't have surprised me, but it did, because I hadn't gone there for a day out. And it was just a very, very weird sort of transition from moving past. And now, obviously, I went in through the visitor's entrance, which is the same place that school kids on tours go through.
Yeah, so you weren't that important, just so that people get a sense of your... rise, the corridors of power of this country.
I did stand in the antechamber outside of both the House of Lords and the House of Commons. That was quite interesting, to be able to look in both directions, like, you know, look in one direction. To my left, there was the Commons. To my right, there was the Lords.
Are they really opposite each other like
that? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm guessing that they're smaller than you imagine.
I didn't press my nose up to the glass because Parliament was in session, so it would have been bad form.
Mm. And tell me, what was your costume? What costume did you wear? Russian Cossack? I hope you weren't Russian Cossack.
No, I repped a series of English designers.
You did, of course.
That's what I went with. I went with Oliver Spencer, I went with Arkit. Now, both English designers, but they make in Portugal. And then I had a Private White VC overcoat, which is designed and made in Manchester. And I was also wearing a pair of Dr. Martin boots, but the made in Britain Dr. Martin range.
So there's also a made overseas version of Dr. Martin's?
Yeah,
which
I don't buy because the quality of the shoe is significantly lower, and they're also significantly cheaper. It's a cheaper base price point.
So I didn't realize you could still buy, because Doc Martens were they Northampton?
Yeah, Northampton.
Are they still made there? Those ones that are Great Britain made.
The Great British ones, yeah. The Great British ones are made in just outside of Northampton, so they're made in Northamptonshire. Yeah.
Mm. And how much? How much would it cost to buy a pair of Dr. Martens made in Great Britain boots? Dr. Martens boots. Oi!
Starting point would be around about 250, 260 versus the kind of between 90 and 120 starting point for the
knockoffs.
The made in China version. No, they're still there.
The original, but not the... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. However, I will say, if you pay attention to sales, you can get them for half price,
you're married to the best bargain hunter in the world.
She was the one who sent me the link. She said, Lee, have you seen these boots? Because I was looking for a new pair of boots because my Blundstones were about to give up the ghost, which I've been wearing those boots into the ground. And I needed a new pair.
Do your DMs? Do they have laces or are they slip-on ones?
I went with laces, which was quite a shift from Blunnies.
Yeah, it's hard if you're going in and out of dance studios. Oh, lace them up.
Walking the dog.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't go in and out of dance studios that often anymore.
No, I guess you don't.
You might not be surprised to hear. I used to, not so much now.
If you ever come and visit me, you can go in and out of the dance studio just to practice. And also you could totally wear your designer English things as well. And you can look left and see the toilet and look right and see a funny little meeting room.
Okay, I'll do that. That sounds nice.
I said, was it a good day? Like, was it interesting?
Yes, it was fascinating. It was really fascinating. I had... So I was one of the speakers.
Oh, did you get flop sweats?
No, I didn't. I was actually getting... This is going to sound weird. I was getting quite anxious about the fact that I wasn't anxious. and I realised I wasn't anxious.
We are strange creatures, Lee Miller.
Yeah, I'm nervous that I'm not nervous.
And just listeners, I don't mean just Lee and me, I mean human beings.
I thought I should have been more nervous, but I realised that I had been incredibly well prepared by two colleagues. Because I was asked, this was the launch of something called the Southwest Think Tank, and I was asked to speak to policymakers about what policies would need to change in order to support the industry that I was speaking for. And I was speaking for the creative, cultural and digital industries in the Southwest. And obviously, I'm speaking in direct relationship to the training that is happening for them through university offers. So that was what I was doing.
Did you look at notes at all, or you had it just all, you had it all down?
Oh, no, I looked at notes. No. I looked at notes because I had to do kind of an introductory thing, and I read that. And then I was really well prepared. We had three questions that were sent in advance, and I'd written longhand my responses to those questions, but I didn't look at them. That was kind of a rehearsal process for me. But I had been briefed incredibly well by a colleague, or a couple of colleagues, but one particularly, a fabulous woman called Alicia. She's just like all over policy, and she just really understands things. And so she just broke it down for me in a meeting and in a couple of emails beforehand, saying, okay, here are things that you should think about. Go away and read more about this. Look at this thing. And so she just directed me where... She directed my gaze so that I could be prepared going in. It's really great having people who are dead, dead good at what they do helping you.
Yeah.
I suspect that's not a very interesting story, except to say that it was a fun day out.
No, I don't know. I think it's... I mean, I got lost in my thoughts then about policy and just what it must be like in Parliament to be, you know, that you're just on the receiving end of people wanting things. And, you know, making cases for what it is that they want, and how what it's like for a you know, the people that work for politicians, I forget what they call them, civil servants, but who are effectively, they must be filtering that stuff, or at what point does it get told to the, you know, the actual people who are starting to make those kinds of decisions? And
We've got a new person who started at work this week who is a co-appointee between the local council and the university, and they are they're somebody who's effectively to reflect upon and try to develop policies over the next 2 years.
So really they use the word wonk, isn't it? It's such a curious word. Have we talked policy wonk?
Yeah, policy wonk. I wouldn't dare to call her a policy wonk. I've only had one conversation with her, but a really interesting woman. We were talking about exactly that, and so she's worked in central government, and she says the thing about the job that she's in, or was in, because obviously she's now seconded to us for 2 years, is that you can on one day be doing education, the next day you could be fielding questions about immigration, and she said, and that's her role. MPs get moved around even more, and I think we were talking about this the other week.
Yes, and how they just
MPs
can't possibly
don't know anything about what they're talking about, you know, and even ministers who are supposed to be speaking directly to that particular area don't know anything, which I think we see exposed time and time again when people are interviewed on TV, and you kind of get horrified and disgusted. And it's like, how can you not know that? And of course, actually, the moment that you start to try to unpick the information about a topic, you realise, holy cow.
Yeah, and I
this one thing is,
yeah, and I just get so angry about politicians. Wow, I sound like I was slurring my issues then. My politicians not answering questions. Like, why don't they answer the question? And then I've kind of occurred to me after reading that thing, actually, because they don't know the answer. So they're just sticking to a kind of a rote thing. It's not because they're basically dodging the question. It's a weird sort of
it's
thing.
Because they... Yeah, it's really odd where people, and I think possibly because we come from an academic context where if somebody asks you a question that you don't know the answer to, and you're good at what you do, you will say, you know, I really don't know the answer to that. Let's try and figure it out. Let's talk it through.
Yeah,
let's
explore, I think that's rarer in the academy than it ought to be. I mean, I'd like to think that's the case, but
I've seen you be asked questions that you don't know the answer to, and I've seen you cough to it really comfortably and have a really open conversation about it. So I know that you absolutely do that.
I'm very comfortable doing it, but I'm just saying I've definitely been in situations where I think that I think I'm speaking about the academy in general. I think it should be more common than it is. I think we make up shit much more than we do. Much more than we saw.
Oh, yeah. No. I fully agree with you. I know full well I've sat in rooms with people and somebody has said, oh, have you read such and such a thing? And they've gone, oh, yes, of course. And you think, no, you haven't.
I've told you about getting French philosophers' names wrong on purpose just to wind people up. I'm sure I've told you that.
Is it getting them wrong or is it mispronouncing them?
Sorry, mispronouncing. Oh, both. Just both are equally annoying for people. Deleuze.
Deluge. Deluge and guitar.
Walter Benjamin, isn't it? Anyway.
Oh, I love saying Walter Benjamin and watching Benjamin. People twitch when they're like, it's Walter Benjamin. It's like, except I'm English, so come on.
Yeah, I know.
Let's not...
There's some pretty high horses in this room aren't there? Let's just step down off them briefly.
But that one, I will always say Walter Benjamin because I feel like such an absolute tit.
I mean, I think if I spoke German, yeah, exactly. But even then, isn't it? I mean, I feel even bad saying. I feel bad saying gnocchi in England because people don't know what you're talking about, right?
You didn't mind picking me up that it's pistachio.
Oh, I do that just absolutely because I just love seeing Italians twitch when you say I'll have the pistachio. Thanks.
But it is one of those things, isn't it? This is a thing.
Chocolato.
When you say, like, when somebody asks you to say something in Italian, does your brain... No, hang about. I'm not explaining myself properly. I found that somebody asked me about a place in Lisbon the other day, like an area, and they sort of said, do you know this place? And I repeated the place back, but I said it properly rather than the way that they were saying it. I'm going, because I didn't recognize the word when they said it. And I was like, you mean? And I repeated it. And then as soon as I finished saying it, I went, sing. I thought, what a twatty thing to do. But I realized it's because my brain...
What were you wearing when you were saying that stuff? Like, what costume did you have on?
I had...
You had overalls, didn't you? Pink overalls, I'm sure.
But I had that moment where I immediately thought, does Simon fall into that trap where somebody asks him something about Italian and then he starts to talk Italian? Because you've got a much better grasp of the language.
No, I did. I had a funny moment the other day during a lesson and someone came to the Italian lesson and someone came to the door. I said, grazie. And then my Italian teacher, of course, could hear me because I still had my headphones on, you know, my little in-ear things, and was just giggling in my ear. And the guy looked at me like, I said, sorry, that was a very odd. But I don't know. I definitely have done that thing. And I think it's pretty obnoxious both ways, meaning it's hard to know, actually. It's really tricky. And I'll give you an example which makes it trickier. I'll get there in a minute. But because if I say a particular word the way it would be said in Italy, it's hard for it not to be correcting someone. And, of course, I do that. And I do that with my friends and colleagues, and we have a bit of a laugh about it. Because, like, pistachio, it is, and stracciatella and all the other flavours of ice cream, which is pretty much the only Italian I know. But
you are such a fibber.
I know, it's true. But then the flip side, of course, is that if we're talking about something in English, and if I were to use someone's name, the correct way to say that person's name, it might not be recognizable to people in England. So I'm effectively not only being a snob, I'm also obfuscating. I'm getting in the way of the conversation being understood. There's a weird thing. And so the trickier example is in New Zealand growing up, and Now, the Maori language in New Zealand is much, much stronger than 40 years ago. I mean, it's incredible at the way in which it's flourished, not because I left, but certainly in the time that I left. So I left in 92, 93, really. And so there are place names, for example, in the North Island, there's a place called Paikakariki. And we never called it Pai Kokoriki. We called it Pai Kok.
Right.
And if you said Pai Kokoriki, people would think you were being a dick, basically.
Right, yeah.
So that's
yeah.
a kind of a white or European, or sort of the anglicization of. And there are other ones that are, which is just escaping me now memory-wise, where you wouldn't even recognize if you said the Maori version of the word. In my time, when I lived there, you wouldn't recognize it as the place name. So it's kind of, that's a weird situation when we're all part of the same country, and that there's this split between the way in which the word is said and the way in which this word, by effectively in the Maori language, and in the way in which it's used colloquially. And so you see what I'm getting at. It's
oh, absolutely. And I think, and now I'm kind of going, ooh, am I being unkind when I don't say, when I mispronounce Walter Benjamin, or I anglicise Walter Benjamin, and I'm kind of like, oh, yeah.
No, I think that's a different thing. I think that's just winding up the people in the crowd who really when I say crowd, I mean the four people in the, you know.
I tell Bob everything because it's just, well, for two reasons. One, I need to unburden somewhere safe. And two, Bob cannot remember a single thing I've ever told her. So she goes, ooh, that's awful, 15 minutes later. So what do you think? So what do I think about what?
Right. So she sponges that stuff. She sponges it and it just disappears.
Yeah. And it's because I think it's because she can remember lots of things. It's not that she's got a bad memory. It's that she is wired to be utterly disinterested in other people's affairs, and by affairs I mean business.
Well, how do you get on Bob's signal then? Like, what do you have to say to Bob for her to remember it for more than 15 minutes?
Probably don't tell her stuff about other people.
Oh, so there's just got a really great filter for that kind of thing.
She's just anything that even starts to have the merest
sniff.
Hint that it might be gossip. She's just like, I don't. Why would I need to know that? Why would that be interesting to me?